Troy Alm, there was a day school down there where they sent the kids to school in the daytime and go back home at night. But they had the tuberculosis down there so bad that they were about all to die off. Somebody went in there and convinced the government that maybe they should treat them, which they did, and they finally cured them pretty well of tuberculosis. Otherwise, what they'd bring them from home, they'd bring to the school and then transfer to somebody else until a whole bunch got TB so bad. But they finally got that quit.
Well, when we were at Star Lake, I can remember, I don't know what the years were, when they used to come out there and when Mr. Stacker was the superintendent. What year was that, you remember?
Back in the 30s, dear.
Back in the 30s, I guess. And I can remember them coming to Star Lake to gather up enough Navajo children to send to Gnasho to the school. Mm-hmm. And now we never knew that we'd be living, living after all these years living in Gnasho, but we'd always heard of Gnasho.
Did they ask them if they wanted to go, or did they just round them up?
Round them up.
Oh, they just
Mr. Stacker would go around to each place, and he'd say, I want this kid, and I want this kid, and I want this kid, and I want this kid. Oh, no, we want to keep this one to herd sheep. No, herd your own sheep. He'd get him up and send him to school. They didn't ask him if they wanted to go. He told them. And he was what they call an Otani Yazzie. That's the short boss. But they understood that he was the boss. And when he would tell them, I want this kid and that kid and that kid, they better have them there. And they did. If not, they would help one or two of them back, and one of them to be a medicine man, another to be a sheep herder, and then had about 50% of the children in school that he should have had. But he told them that they had to go to school. There were no ifs and buts about it. They called him Otani Yazzie at the Crown Point, and one of the ships off, they called him Otani Nez, which means tall fellow. And those guys were the bosses. They made him understand. They were the boss. And they would tell the Indians what to do, and in later years they didn't have anybody to tell them what to do. That's the reason they didn't know what to do with their education and stuff like that. I imagine now they go and ask them, do you want to go to school? Before they said, you are going to school, whether they wanted to or not.
Well, now, was Noslini, was it always a trading post? Was there always a trading post there?
Not always. Somebody started it sometime or other.
Yeah.
A fellow by the name of Schellenberg. There was about two or three brothers of the Schellenbergs, I guess, came out after World War I, and they set up trading posts on the reservation and off the reservation. One of them was over there by Crown Point. And one of them was named Don Schellenberg and the other named Con Schellenberg. I don't know what the other name was. But one of the Schellenbergs was at Noslini. But see, that at that time, probably after World War I, you could go to the BIA office, I think it was in Fort Defiance at the time, and apply for a license and put up a bond to operate a trading post on the reservation. You didn't have to go around and get the community's permission before you set up a trading post. You got the license, you put up your bond, and operated on the rules and regulations of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. They wouldn't let you sell playing cards or anything like that, no gambling devices, which all the traders abided by. But of course the Indians figured out a way that they would gamble with shoes and stuff like that, shoe games and things like that that they gambled with. They didn't have to have those playing cards, but they could go off the reservation and buy them.
And now they're going to, now that's going to be the big thing to do on the reservation.
It's too bad that they all have to worry about would be playing cards now.
Yeah.
Well, that was a rule that they had. And they wouldn't sell them liquor or anything like that. You couldn't have it on the reservation. And that was a bad thing in a way, because the Indian would come to town, he'd buy him a bottle, and he would, like he'd buy a pint, and he'd be afraid somebody would catch him with it, so he would drink it all. And they got the reputation of being a drunk Navajo, because he didn't know how it would affect him, and he'd fall over dead drunk, and he'd say, "I'm a drunken Navajo." But that's part of the reason was that they were afraid to get caught with it. One instance there in Farmington was this one Indian, he was pretty well educated. They went to town and they bought him a gallon of whiskey, a gallon jug, you know, and they decided they'd hide it somewhere. Well, they took the lariat rope and put it through that hole in the neck of the jug, and they set it in some weeds there back in the alley, and then they strung a rope down so they could find it again. So they went back to get the whiskey, and the cops saw them all going back there, and it was right behind the jail. They didn't know where the jail was. It was right behind the jail. So this one, and then he had this rope in his hand, saying that he'd call it up, you know, and then he'd throw it out. And throw it out again. Didn't want to pull it out there. See, he was talking to this policeman. The policeman couldn't figure what they was doing back there. And they gave him whiskey right behind the jacket. He said, "I thought I'd wear that rope out, throwing it out to that policeman find a letter and we could leave."
It's also, still an interesting thing with the liquor on the reservation. We were in Chin Lay. The second in command of Chin Lay Post was a friend of mine. And we'd get together and drink beer once in a while. And if we'd run out, he'd run down to a place in town where you could buy beer illegally. But you go to a meeting, and I'd hear him talk about how they'd had that place under observation. For months, they were using night vision scopes trying to get evidence that something was going on there, and they just couldn't quite pin it down. Yeah. But when he wanted a beer, that's where he'd go and
I think they should have liquor on the reservation and control it.
About a bill of
that
trails?
Would keep them off of the highways.
Keep them out of town.
You know, like the problem they have between Window Rock and Gallup, Shiprock and Farmington, anywhere else they have to go off of the reservation to Winslow or Holbrook. They go down there and they've got drunks on the highway. If they had liquor on the reservation and controlled it, the Navajo tribe could get a benefit from it. The Navajo people could get a benefit from it. But control who they sell it to, not sell it to all these old winos.
I always heard it, the border town liquor dealers were handing money to council members to keep them from approving it on reservation. Do you think there was anything to that? Or?
I don't doubt it a bit. I think that's the reason they haven't done it.
Well, over in the eastern part of New Mexico, in Texas, there's a dry county over there in New Mexico and Texas. And they would send money to the churches over there, the liquor operators, when it was wet. Send money to the churches over there so they'd keep it dry before they could come over there and trade. Well, same thing could have happened here. I don't say that it didn't, but it could have, but I don't think so. But here's the way I feel about those councilmen taking bribes and things like that, I don't think they're any more guilty than the person that gives it to them. Mm-hmm. And I think the person that gives it to them is just as guilty as they are. I think Peter McDonald took the bribes because they were offered. If nobody had ever offered, he would have never taken them. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have had the chance to take them. Or even ask for them. Well, the person that's given it is just as guilty as he is. They should both be prosecuted. And that would keep that down. Mm-hmm. Every man has his price, even if it's a 5 cent cigar.
Now, Tisnos Pass, has there ever been in, is there a trading post there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tisnos Pass means a ring of cottonwood trees. Nos Pass.
I'd heard that it had to do with trees.
The old trading post.
And Tis is a cottonwood. Tisnos Pass.
What did you tell me? Durango? How'd you say it?
Kinsan.
And that means?
Lots of houses.
Okay. And Albuquerque was?
Hey, Tilsonelli. That's where the bell is.
And you don't know what bell it is? What
on
bell?
The ring.
Well, I mean, whether it must have been one
bell. Well, you know, like in the courthouse, they have a bell that rings.
Uh-huh.
Don't they have one
I thought
Durango?
Maybe it was the original church or something that they were talking about.
I
never did hear what which
bell. What they
what
call
the
it.
Bell.
How about Gallup?
They call it Nunjorji's Bridge, the place where the bridge is. Goes across that Rio Perky, you know, when you go into town.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you don't notice it much anymore, but it used to be just a little narrow bridge. So they call it Nunjorji. They call Farmington Free Waters. It's what the white people call it, but the Navajos call it Topata. That means among the waters. The white people came up with the word free waters. They call a place out south of Farmington, they call it Pistai. The white people changed it to Bistai.
Yeah,
you don't like better. Bistai, you like Bistai. But Pistai's those clay peaks are sticking up like that. That's what it means, Pistai.
What's Zitnaldifle mean?
What?
The school out south of, you know.
Say it again.
I don't think I can say it right.
Zitnaldifle.
Yeah.
It's Whirlwind Mountain.
Really? That's where the school is.
Zitnaldifle. Nahotifle is a whirlwind.
Ah.
Zitnaldifle. Surprisingly, the number of people that can't even pronounce the name of that school.
Right.
Oh, not everybody's smart like you.
Even the people that went to it can't pronounce it. They call it Disneyland.
Yeah.
Well, that's close. That's not it. What's the other one down there at Kirtland?
Nahon.
Nahonizad, or whatever they call it. Oh.
Nahonizad. Nahonizad. What that is,
it's far
the
away.
Bridge, you know, was up at Farmington. Nahani Nizad is it's a long ways to the bridge.
It's all relative.
Yeah. A lot of their words are descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
They describe things so you know what it means, like a spark plug on the engine of a car. They call it Kletsaslakaigi, which means like a white teacup. That's the porcelain.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be made out of porcelain. They call a spark plug Kletsaslakaigi. And they call them the motor of the Bitsitsing, that's the head. And they call the battery the J, that's like the heart. And they call tires the K. Like 2 feet.
Shoes.
Shoes.
Shoes for the car. Well, I'll probably learn it there.
Of course, things like that come along. Then you have to, they had to develop words. The only word they never did find one for was jelly. That's jelly anywhere you find it all over the reservation.
Well, we were talking about this, you know, when you listen to the radio and they do ads, they'll be speaking along in Navajo and then there'll come something that is just English. Because there's no word for it, I guess. Did you go to many of the ceremonials or did you get invited to those?
Oh, yeah, you could go to them if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. We would go, but by land it would be nearly daylight before they'd ever get started to do anything. By that time, we were ready to
all of their,
go home and go to bed.
Most all of their ceremonies are healing propositions for healing somebody that's sick or something like that. They have a squaw dance for somebody that's sick. What is interesting to note, they have a squaw dance, they have different singers from different places around. They will sing, and then they will decide who the best singers are.
It's like these music festivals.
Yeah.
That's a
little competition.
Crude way.
How about, now you mentioned that they help bury people, or what about weddings? Did you take part in anything like that?
No, I remember out in Star Lake we were invited to a wedding one time. But I don't know, something happened. And we just got tired of waiting, so my dad wouldn't stay any longer, so we went home.
They took
so we never got to see the actual wedding.
A medicine basket like one there in the corner. And they mix up some mush, you know, like cornmeal mush and stuff like that. They put in there and man, he'd be on one side and he'd be eating there and she'd be eating here. When they eat it all, well, then they're married.
I don't think they have any traditional
that's what
weddings like they used to.
That's what they call
it. Anymore, they have their engagements in the paper. And
they eat when they get married, they eat. And if one of them refuses to eat, they don't get married.
Mm-hmm. Sounds a lot cheaper than the way we do it.
Well, they had a custom of picking out the girl for their son, and then they had to pay the girl's family with horses. So many horses for the girl. When Jane and I got married about 2 weeks later, we went over to Star Lake to see her parents. The first thing her dad asked me is, where are my horses?
Did you, how long were you guys at Noslini? Just 3 years? So that was later. And Jane went to school, or Jane, Ann went to school in Ganado, is that right?
Well, when we first moved out there, we were 18 miles from Ganado where the school was. So Woodrow would get up every morning and take the kids into school, Dollars and Ann. Take them into school, and this woman whose husband worked at the Ganado Trading Post, she heard about it and she felt sorry for us because we had to drive back and forth, so she offered to keep them. So she would keep them during the week and then we'd go after them on weekends.
People from Noslini that I knew, let's see, Jimmy Begay, who was transportation director for Chinle, was from the Noslini chapter. And then Robert Salabai, who was the councilman out there, he would have been probably
a kid
when you were there. But Jimmy Begay is around your age.
We've been to so many places and known so many Navajos, it's hard to distinguish them. You know, I like to hear their name and You can't place.
Jibge means son of somebody. Benelli is the son of a son.
Grandson.
But Mitsuri is the son of a daughter. They distinguish a grandson from a man or a grandson from a woman. So that's a Mitsuri and a Benelli.
And you said Yazi is short?
Yazi is short and Nez is tall.
Oh, okay. Those are common names. What was...
There were a lot of Van Winkles out that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rips, mm-hmm. Relation, I guess.
You did a little rip snorting out there.
Yeah.
Well, what role? Dina Yazi.
Dina Yazi? Mm-hmm. The little Navajo. They call her, Navajos call themselves Dina.
Yeah.
And Dina Yazi would be a little Navajo. The Netso would be a big Navajo. Mm-hmm. They name people by how they observe you. I don't know what to call Walt.
He does.
But my brother-in-law had a straight nose, and they called him Bacina Eye. The nose would come out like a point, like that. And then they shortened it to Not Eye. That's what they called him. But it took me forever to find out what they called him because they won't tell me. And I was riding with a wagon from over on Charco over to the store, riding in a wagon with Dick Sickle. And I just kept asking him to tell me what they called my brother-in-law. And he finally told me what they called him. And then I knew what to call him.
Do you remember how you say it in Navajo?
I can't say it well. I can say I can be close. Base Bajati, which is man with the steel hat for German.
Fish Bacha.
Fish Bacha?
Cha is hat and fish is metal. Fish Bacha is what they call the German in World War
One. That's what they call him.
That's what they call him.
Fish Bacha. Did you have
called a, my dad have a ears. Yeah,
helmet?
Big ears.
No, they just ears. Knew I was German.
Oh. John D'Ashi.
Well, that's the reason then.
Mm-hmm.
You know how her dad got his name? He was there at Star Lake. And people that lived on down in Torreon and one thing or another, they would be coming to the store and they'd stop at somebody else's hogan. They maybe had somebody there that could speak English. To go with them to the store to interpret for them. So they got to where they'd stop and ask somebody, and they said, well, your ears are up to the store. That was her dad. He understood what they said, so they called him Ears.
Hmm. Paul Turpin.
Said, your ears are up to the store.
They called Paul Turpin either Spider or Daddy Long Legs. I can't remember. How would you say?
I don't know how you'd say. I never.
Spider? Do they have a?
I never did have any trouble with those spiders.
This guy was 6'5" and real skinny and had real long legs.
Uh-huh, that was good thing for that. Well, we picked out good
things. There was a fellow of John Tyler. They called him a Honda Eye. And he was long-legged, probably 6'4". They called him a Honda Eye. That meant he doubled over, double-sized or something like that. There's one word that's kind of hard to say. I want you to repeat after me. Not so speaking it next me.
Say it again.
Not so speaking it next me.
Not so
Nisli.
What is that?
That means camera. That you take a picture with. I was always amused at that word, and I asked my brother-in-law's brother, tell me the word for camera in Navajo. You know what he told me? Kodak.
That's like when I asked, when I first moved to Ignacio, and I was, we had a Girl Scout troop, and we were going to do kind of a traditional Native American dish to take to something we were going to. So I called one of the people that I knew that worked at the SUCAP and asked her, well, what, you know, we kind of had an idea what to take for regular food, but we wondered what to take for dessert. She said canned peaches. So we did.
Well, they used to love canned peaches. They come to the store. They get a can of tomatoes. Dad had sugar there for them. They'd pour sugar in the tomatoes. So they'd sit there in the middle of the floor. They'd squat down in the bullpen that we called. They'd sit there and eat. Now, that was a delicacy for them. That was a treat for them. A can of peaches and a can of tomatoes. Maybe some crackers. They're really living it up. It's funny to see them how the times have changed, though. As I remember them as we were kids growing up, you know, how they dressed and how they acted.
You still see those old grandmas out there, though, herding the sheep in their long dresses, but they have, a lot of them wear knee socks and Nikes now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That one old lady there that you'd always see on the edge of Chin Lake, she must have been in her late 90s. But boy, she just crossed that sagebrush chasing those sheep.
Well, my sister and her husband used to be out at Bidahochi. And she said all the latest hairstyles and everything new, you know, but they'd be the first ones. Those Navajo girls would be the first ones to come in the store with a new hairdo or anything that was new fad.
TV has probably made as much difference as anything, because it's it just brings everything in now.
When we lived at White Rock, and I lived at White Rock with my brother and sister, we had an Arbuckle's box, you know, that's what they used to ship the Arbuckle's coffee in 1 pound packages. And it turned up on the edge and had a radio on top of it, and then we had a curtain in front of it, you know, to put magazines and stuff in underneath it. We brought this one Indian in, the name of Jimmy Foster, to let him hear the radio. And we asked him what he thought that was. He said, there's somebody behind that cloth talking. We open it up now. He said, it just comes through the air. Well, he said, I'd have to hear a Navajo talking on that before I would believe it. Now, that was their first impression of it, see. So they call the radio, it comes through the air, he's channeling it, talking through the air. And telephone is, talks through the wire. They thought it had a hole in it so that you could hear them through there as you talked to them. That was their first impression. But then as time went along, the Indians got to talking on the radios. And like you say, the television
brought
a lot of things to them that they didn't ever believe. We lived at Mexican Water. There was a young lady that used to come to the store and trade, and we asked her if she knew where Farmington was. She said, they say it's over there where the moon comes up. That's about what she knew about it, you know, where the moon comes up.
You know, that's funny, but I was tutoring somebody in Detroit where they'd had the riots. And there was a girl there who'd never been out, she'd never been outside of her neighborhood.
Yeah.
She didn't know any more than that.
Well, that's the way they were out there. They hadn't been anywhere. The trading post used to serve an area about 15 miles from the store. course, when they made a trip to the store and back home, that was a 30-mile trip. And that's about as far as they would come, and it'd be, they could go to the other store about the same distance. And that's about as far as they would travel.
Well, just in this area, too, in doing these interviews with people who grew up around here, or not my age, but older, the schools, if they went to Allison to school, they might not know the kids that went to Tiffany to school.
No, they wouldn't, because the transportation wasn't so great. Just the old muddy roads and horseback was about the only way they could go. It was too muddy for... You can imagine what these roads were like in the early days before they had gravel or anything on them.
I know what our road was like before they put the rock and the gravel on it.
Our driveway.
It'd be rutted to be that deep.
The Navajos have changed a lot, and so have the white people. They've changed a lot in the last 40 years, what they used to be.
That's a point. You know, I think we always see how other people change, but you're right.
Yeah, we've changed too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We used to go from hold school board meetings in the different chapters. There were 17 chapters in our school district. And you could see a real difference in the people, depending on which chapter you were in. If you get out around Pinyon, people from Burnt Corn and back in those areas, they were a whole lot different than people from Chinle or Gracewood and Lukachukai, that area. Big differences.
What they don't realize that this Indian language has different accents on the reservation. Just like the north of the United States and the southern part, they have different accents. Some of those people from New Jersey, you can hardly understand. You have the same problem of speaking to the Navajos on the reservation. On the eastern part of the reservation and checkerboarded area, they have a lot of Spanish words in with their language. That's due to the association with the Mexican people, such as sheep herders and bootleggers and whatnot, that they were in contact with. You get back on the interior of the reservation, you use a Spanish word, they think you're crazy. They don't know what you're talking about. And their money, they call a nickel clitzo. Would be kind of like that paper over there. That was a nickel. And a dime was blue like a turquoise. 25 cents. A yowl was 12 and a half cents. Two yowls would be 25 cents. Naki yowl would be 50 cents. Six yowls would be 75 cents. Then they used $1, one peso, or a dollar. That's the way they describe their money. And I guess in the early days, their nickels were orange, the dimes were blue, and naki yowl was 25 cents. Be two yowls. Teeny yowl is 450 cents.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because a quarter is 2 bits.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing.
And somebody said that the origination of that was the Spanish.
Yowl on the spur, probably.
Well, and it was Spanish, and apparently, even at the time that the Revolutionary War in this country was taking place, they were using that monetary system on our East Coast, even though it was Spanish, because they had come first and had established it. So that 2 bits idea is, that's where we get that, I guess. And
well,
there it is.
Yowl is a yowl on the spur.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably where it came about.
I don't know, but
could
they said...
Could have been a row, but they can change it just to suit themselves.
Yeah.
Whatever accent they want to put on it.
But that 12 and a half cents, you know, it's the idea that a quarter is 2 bits. I always wondered why they said that, and that's apparently that's too.
Yeah. You could even hear the difference in from location to location. Yeah. Sound very different.
Well, over here on the eastern part, this peak of snow, they call it Zus. Over on the reservation, they call it Yus. Did you understand the difference? Zus and Yus. Mm-hmm. And in some places they call it, on the bridge, they call it Nunjoji. And another place they call it Nanakai. Do Shle means, am I not right? If you learn to say that word, you say something and you say Do Shle. And if they say, oh, well, you're right, see?
Oh, Canyon de Chelly. What does de Chelly mean?
Well, D-O-Che would mean kind of run down, kind of a crummy outfit, like D-O-Che.
Well, this is Tushé, isn't it? I mean, isn't it written? I don't know what they're saying.
Well, say-e, actually. T-F.
Say
is rock.
Say
rock. I'll bet that's what it is then. Yeah.
Say is rock.
And then the Spanish just gave it a Spanish spelling.
Yeah. Well, it's like Chin Lee was spelled with L-E-E, like Chin Lee, like Chinese.
Looks like Chinese or something.
For a while.
A lot of those words they have like that don't really come from any languages. Somebody manufactured them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nozlini, is that beautiful valley?
No.
What's it mean?
Noslin, where the water runs around in a circle. Mm. You know, up above the store there where it comes out of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Comes down, hits an up, dropping like that, and turns and goes back this way and then back out. Mm. Noslin. Mm-hmm. See, Nospas would be round. Noslin. Around that.
No, I've learned something.
Tohadalina, that Hadalina, that's, you've heard of Tohadalina, that's where the water runs out. Tohadalina.
How about Lukachukai?
Well, you know what the straw is that you drink pop out of? They call that a Lukai. And it's a grass that grows up there on that mountain that has a hole in the center like a straw.
Chain grass.
Lukai. Lukai Chukai. That's a mountain. It is named after a grass that grows up there. They call a straw you drink out of Lukai.
If the people wanted a really good... did the Navajos ever... You said something about Jemez. Or however you say it, Jemez.
Jemez. Pueblo.
I heard that that was a place where there was supposed to be good medicine. Like you could go and get a good medicine man. Did you ever?
Well,
but their medicine was strong.
They're kind of like the white people. Somebody's sick, and the doctors around here can't cure them. They'll go over the other side of the mountain and get them a doctor and bring them over. We do the same thing, and the doctors that can't cure us, we go to Denver, or we go to Mayo Clinic or something like that. It's a grasp of getting well, is what it is. Jemez Pueblo, they have a meeting over there about once a year, and a lot of the Indians would go over there to have this big feast with them. They did more so from Star Lake. Jane can tell you more about that than I can.
Well, I don't know too much about it other than the Navajos would, you know, would be quite a journey for them. They'd go to Jemez for their rituals they had and their dances. And I suppose they would exchange blankets and rugs mm-hmm. and things.
Did you ever hear the Navajos mention the Utes in terms of being enemies or traditional enemies or anything? Because I've heard that.
The first horses that the Navajos obtained, they stole them from the Utes. And they rode them until wintertime came, and the Indians got hungry, so they butchered the horses and ate them. Then they had to go back and steal some more. First time they stole them, they didn't steal the bridles or anything, and they didn't know how to operate them. Next time they got bridles and ropes and things to get, but they stole them from the Utes. Now the Jicarí Apache, you've heard of those people. They are a branch of the Navajos. Or the Navajos are a branch of the Jicarías. But the Jicarías is what they call the mountain people. They stayed up in the trees. And the Jicarías says those Navajos down there are the Hunkai people. They live out in the prairie. That's the difference. And their language is a lot the same. The Jicarí and the Navajo.
White River also.
Yeah.
Apache.
Yeah. Also, I know one time there was an Indian came in the store and asked us if we knew of any other Indians off to the south somewhere. And that's what they were talking about, those White River. That they had heard about it in their history somewhere, you know. But that's the way they split up. Some of them stayed up here, the Jicarí, as they call them, the cold people, because they stay up where it's cold. But they're kind of lazy. They hire Navajos to herd their sheep for them. And so did the Utes. They would hire Navajos to work for them, because they weren't too ambitious.
I understand the Utes hired Spanish to work for them, too, when they first started.
Yeah. And there must have been some other people, too, that they have curly hair, you know, and kind of dark complected, don't have to buy suntan lotion. And there's been a lot of interesting things happen as time went along. The Navajos had quite a chore of learning the white man's ways and things that they needed to do. Back in 1936, there was an Indian out there at White Rock that bought him a new Ford pickup, 1936 model. Had a clutch in it, a brake, and a three-speed transmission. Well, they weren't built heavy enough for that rugged country of sand washes, sand bars and everything. My brother-in-law happened to have a 36 Ford pickup, the same model as this Indian had. The Indian came up to the store one day and he said he left that pedal out and said nothing happened. So my brother-in-law told him, well, it's probably a clutch. He put a new clutch in there. They didn't make heavy-duty clutches or didn't put them in when they sold them. And eventually they started making heavy-duty clutches. Anyway, he ordered him a clutch, and of course the Indian lived 7 or 8 miles from the store, and he took it down there and he put the clutch in, he took it out and put the clutch in and everything. Came back and said it still don't work, so my brother-in-law was showing him that rod, you know, that you, it works it, that you have to adjust that, you know, to make it work. Oh, he said, I can't do that. He said, I took a hacksaw and sawed that off. So then he had to buy him a new rod to put on. He couldn't get the nuts off of it very easy, so he just sawed it in two.
Experience is the best teacher.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, they went through lots of things like that.
Yeah.
You know? One time out there at Star Lake, Jane's dad was telling about this Indian got about 100 yards from the store and had a blowout. And so he took the tire off and patched the tube and put it back together and had a big split about that long. He was sewing it up with baling wire. James' dad told him, said, that won't work. He said, you need some buckskin or something to sew that up with. You don't sew that. Oh, no, he said, this baling wire is strong. He said, you can't pull it apart. So he sewed it up real good and he drove it about 100 yards and kapow! Blew out again. That wire working like that just all come loose.
But I mean,
they had some trying times to get around that country. There's one that used to freight out there to Star Lake and Pebble Alto on those stores out there. And one wash over there, they call it cornmeal wash. We wondered why they called it cornmeal wash. They got stuck in the pickup there and they had some little sacks of cornmeal like that on loaded on the in the groceries. They didn't have anything to put under the wheel, so they put those little sacks of cornmeal under there so they could dry it out. It got out of the sand that way. So that was known as the cornmeal wash.
That's what got its name.
I've seen some names out there that I wondered about.
Who was the fellow you asked if he knew?
Jim Counselor?
Yeah.
He had Counselor's trading post out there on the highway to Albuquerque for years. I think his wife wrote a book.
Yeah, I was trying to remember her name. She wrote the book, Wild, Woolly, and Wonderful.
Was it about her life there?
Well, yeah, about the Navajos. About her life and the different characters that she remembered.
Mm-hmm.
That's been years ago. I know I read the book. I don't know whether you can get it anywhere.